Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Mini Crush.
Hello.
That's Noel.
Hi, it's me.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing great, as you know.
You're a little under the gun.
Under the gun. So we got to record this thing so I can go to the airport. So, geez, let's get right to it. Instead of chit-chatting, we got a new segment.
Oh, boy.
It's called...
Take this job.
All right.
Shove it.
So, Noel, a little bit like Almost Famous, where actors had turned down movies that went on to be very iconic roles. This is directors who turned down jobs. And some directors are very famous for turning down a lot of great movies,
mm-hmm.
you know, because a lot comes their way. Alfred Hitchcock turned down The Exorcist. He turned down Rosemary's Baby. He turned down Wait Until Dark. And he turned down Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Interesting. It makes sense, though, because he's sort of the originator of that vibe with, like, Psycho and stuff. I could see them wanting him to be their first pick for a thing
Absolutely.
Like The Exorcist. But I don't think he would have gone as far as Friedkin would have, but we'll never know.
Yeah.
It's an interesting proposition.
David Fincher, he turns down a lot of work because, you know, a lot of these directors, they can do whatever they want.
Sure.
So a lot of movies come their way, but he turned down The Black Dahlia. He turned down the documentary Madonna, Truth or Dare. He was going to direct and then dropped out.
Well, he directed a lot of Madonna videos.
Well, so that makes sense.
He did Vogue, I believe, and maybe Express Yourself.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. He turned down Mission Impossible 3, dropped out over creative differences. He was going to direct Catch Me If You Can, and instead directed Panic Room.
Yeah, a lesser Fincher, though, Panic Room.
Yeah, for sure, mm-hmm. but not a bad movie.
No, no.
Batman Begins, he turned that down. To direct another film. 8mm, he turned down. Remember that one?
I loved 8mm.
Really?
It's so trashy, but it's about the snuff industry.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Like, you know, bondage.
I remember it, but
stuff.
Not well.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
He turned that down to direct Fight Club, so good career choice there.
Big time.
And then he turned down the movie Collateral, the Michael Mann movie with Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx.
That one was good. He's like an assassin. Yeah.
It was good. Uh-huh. And you'll see a thread here popping up. The great Martin Scorsese... the movie Clockers, Spike Lee ultimately directed, he turned down. He signed on but dropped out to do Casino.
Well, that's clearly it was the right choice.
Yeah. He also turned down Collateral. So
Wait.
That's two.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Let's just keep track here.
Interesting.
He turned down Schindler's List. Very interestingly, he turned down the offer because he felt that a Jewish director should take that job.
I would have thought that was Spielberg from Soup to Nuts.
Yeah, like his baby.
I would have thought that, but that's interesting. That's wow, okay.
Yeah, so very – I mean, this just goes to show you, too, sometimes these movies are percolating around Hollywood for years.
Yep, it's passed around.
Spielberg, speaking of, he was going to direct Big, and he actually wanted Harrison Ford to star in the lead role.
Mm-hmm.
But they went in another direction.
Yep.
He turned down Collateral.
Got it.
I feel bad now because...
People thought this was hot shit script, I guess.
Michael Mann, like, was he the fourth choice?
Yeah, must have been.
And those are just the people I saw.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how far down he goes on the list. And that's Michael Mann.
Yeah. He did... What did he do? What's he known for?
Well, Heat.
Yes, that's it. Yeah,
and the original Manhunter movie.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I love that Manhunter movie. That one's good. Heat is also... I watched that recently.
I think The Last of the Mohicans was Michael Mann.
So good.
Yeah.
Heat is just... An epically good movie.
Yeah, one of the great crime movies of all time. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Apparently, according to IMDb, he was attached to the film in the 90s and was going to have Tom Cruise aging backwards.
Who was?
Spielberg.
Spielberg.
Turned it down.
You know, it seems like more of a Spielberg-y movie than a... That's a Fincher, right?
Yeah.
Well, weird choice for Fincher.
I didn't like that movie.
I did not care for that movie.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. He was considered to direct the whole series, but apparently J.K. Rowling... didn't want to lose control of the franchise.
Yeah.
And she thought Spielberg, like, it's all over.
Well, they parsed it out to a bunch of different directors. Like, Chris Columbus, I think, directed the first two of Home Alone fame. And then there were a couple of interesting prestige directors, like that Alfonso Cuarón did one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But just the one, the kind of darker one. No, I don't know. I didn't see the last two. I think they get pretty dark.
See, I knew you were a big fan.
I'm not, man. I dropped off. I haven't seen the last, like, two or three. I really don't care about
Certainly
the movies.
You know a lot about it, Noel.
It's in the zeitgeist, man. I
You have a daughter.
I have a daughter. She doesn't like it either.
Oh, really?
I mean, she doesn't not like it. She just doesn't. It's not like her thing, you know?
I think you guys need to really dig into and unpack how you feel about Harry Potter.
This is all your narrative here, Chuck. I don't know where this is coming from.
I love this thing we've created. Last action hero, Spielberg turned that down to direct Schindler's List.
That was a shit movie, so.
Mm-hmm. Rain Man, he backed out because he needed to start on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah.
Meet the Parents? Apparently he was approached to direct that with Jim Carrey as the lead.
Yeah, I think of him as a – I mean, he's got good physical comedy stuff in his movies, but he's not a comedy director exactly, right? Like,
No.
Not in that way. That would have been an odd choice. It would have been like, I want to try this comedy thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that kind of movie for sure. And then finally, we're going to finish up with the great Terry Gilliam with Take This Job and Shove It. He turned down some pretty good movies. American Beauty, mm-hmm. he turned down.
Interesting.
A movie called Enemy Mine that I remember growing up. It was a sci-fi movie.
There's an alien on the cover. That's all I remember.
Yeah, Lou Gossett Jr. plays an alien. Forrest Gump, through Terry Gilliam's eyes, it would have been interesting.
Yeah.
And most of these, I'm just like, what would Terry Gilliam have done?
Yeah, very, very much. He's his own thing, kind of.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
Alien Insurrection. Apparently, the Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Alien Resurrection, maybe?
What'd I say?
Insurrection.
Resurrection. Yeah. Did I say Insurrection?
Insurrection, yeah.
This is another one of those where I'm like, did I say that?
This is like the Mandala effect.
That's right. Yeah. Alien Resurrection. Yeah. There should be an Alien Insurrection.
I think Fincher directed Alien Resurrection. That's the one Alien movie that he directed.
It's funny. It seems like there was, for a time, there probably still are just like eight people.
Well, they're all my favorites. I mean, like, they growing up, like, Fincher and Gilliam, like, and, you know, Spike Jones and Michelle Gondry were like my guys.
Yeah. Have you seen the preview for the new Showtime series that Michelle Gondry is doing with Jim Carrey?
No. What? No.
Dude, just look up the trailer. It's called Kidding.
That sounds awesome.
It looks great.
I do want to say one thing about Gilliam. He's been trying to make this Don Quixote movie forever.
He finally did, didn't he?
Yeah, but then he lost the rights.
Shut up.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
He lost the rights at the last minute. Like, the production company that owned it, he apparently, in a weird, unprecedented move, he went ahead and made the movie, even though he didn't have the rights.
So it's dead now?
That's what I read. Yeah.
Oy.
And it's made.
Poor guy.
Yeah. It's got Kylo Ren in it. And oh, my God. Such a, like, I think he needs to just stop.
They made a documentary about him trying to make that
movie.
Yeah,
it's called Lost in La Mancha. It's really, really good.
I haven't seen that one. I need to check that out. All right, we're going to go with the Trope Time segment. Tropes keep coming in. We'll start with David Gooch. He said, not necessarily the Gooch. Not necessarily a trope, but coffee cups are clearly always empty. Maybe not quite a trope, but I definitely agree with him there.
Oh, you mean in terms of, like, the weight of it?
Yeah, like coffee cups and, like, suitcases. It's always clearly empty.
There's definitely
that always bugs me.
I've seen a video where it's mostly from TV where they show people slinging around a coffee cup.
Yeah.
And it's just very clearly got no heft to it at all. Like, there's a YouTube compilation of that. So that's certainly a thing.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to pull one off Facebook real quick because this is a live one because I saw this one just earlier that I thought was a pretty good one. This is from Cy Lowe. I call it the Hollywood wrap, when gift boxes always have the lids wrapped separately so the actor can just pop off the box.
That's pretty
and
funny.
Not tear into gift wrapping.
That's pretty funny.
That is a total trope.
It is.
Nobody wraps gifts like that.
Nobody. Nobody.
Because part of the fun is tearing into that gift wrapping.
Sure is.
You know? Let me see here. Lee Dallas says the I'm in trope when a 14-year-old hack gets into a multi-million dollar computer system in under 30 seconds.
That's right.
I'm in.
It's like
yeah.
I'm in.
It's so great. That's a total trope. And a lot of these tropes are about just cutting to the chase. Clearly,
that's true. That's
you know.
True.
Let me see. Benjamin Johnston says the action chase scene, running, driving, riding a horse. So fast, but wait, there's a cliff.
Eek. Yep.
That's a pretty good trope.
Yeah, that's good. I thought of one today. Actually, my daughter pointed it out. It was raining, and there was a big giant puddle, and I drove through it, and she said, good thing no one was walking there. She said, but that only happens in the movies.
Oh, she's already under the truth.
Someone's having a bad day, and then adding insult to injury, a car drives by and drenches them in a torrent of water.
Could this day get any? Oh, it did. That's funny. And just the wet down period, like – all movies, you know, all streets are wet in movies because they call it the wet down.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't know this and you start paying attention, you wonder, did it just rain in every movie I've ever seen, especially at night?
Right.
They do this because it looks better.
At night, I'm sure it makes it more reflective and makes it where you can see
the
detail.
It's reflective.
Yeah.
And on every single movie, there are water trucks that drive down the road and these sprinklers go off. And they call it the wet down, and they do it before they shoot every single scene.
I did not know that, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. The only person that very famously does not do that very purposefully is Alexander Payne. He is very adamant about his movies looking like movies.
Yep.
And he insists on two things, which are dry streets and dirty cars.
Okay.
If you ever look at one of his movies, like the windshield will be dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like a no-no. You don't do that in movies.
Interesting.
You like clean that windshield right before you shoot.
Right.
But Alexander Payne's like, no, it's not real.
Yeah.
I
like that too.
Bill Steele, every building has a ventilation system a grown person can fit through. But in real life, they could barely fit a toddler. Bill says that as if he's done that. Like stuffed a toddler.
Okay. Yeah. So you got to get it. You got to have a toddler on your crew if you're pulling off a heist.
Yeah. That's a good one, Bill. You're totally right. Kayla Marie Carbone, great name. In romantic comedies, there's always a declaration of love, first kiss in the rain. Why is it always raining? Well, because it's more dramatic to have a kiss in the rain.
It's the wet down.
Yeah, it is the wet down. Let me see here. Akimi Yamaguchi, great name. The shortcut to the airport. How do these people always know about a shortcut that no one else is aware of? And they only use the shortcut when they need to chase someone down. James Kennett unclipping the push stud on a holster when getting ready for a gunfight.
Yeah.
But then putting the gun away and never securing the gun back in.
Well, you know, there might be another gunfight coming up.
That's true. That's a good point, Noel. The old double gunfight.
The old double gunfight. Hey, one good gunfight deserves another.
Let me see. Tammy Mitchell, the woman who was suddenly vomiting. Always pregnant. Or two people who hate each other end up loving each other. Yeah, Tammy, those are two tropes for sure. And I'll add one to the woman vomiting, meaning she's pregnant. The at the beginning of the movie.
Means they have the consumption.
It means they're going to die. Like, nobody coughs in a movie unless they're going
to
die.
Not to mention if it's like a, you know, 1700 set movie, and they're coughing into a rag.
Oh, and then
they pull it away, and there's a little bit of blood.
That's a
you know?
Total trope. Yeah. I mean, no one that bugs me a little bit too. Like, no one coughs or sneezes in movies ever.
Nope.
It's just a thing. I guess you don't want to see people sneeze.
I was going to say, too, with the vomiting thing, they usually also have it happen at a moment for dramatic effect where they're in heated argument or something, and then all of a sudden she runs and pukes, and then it's like, comes back and immediately knows she's pregnant.
Yeah.
You know? It's like right away.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm pregnant.
Again, time savers. Sean Leach says the person being pulled up and out of the way of an oncoming object at the very last second. That's a total trope. And I'm also going to go with this. The car or the run away when something is falling, like a smokestack or a tree or anything, instead of turning right or left and getting out of the path of the falling thing.
Right.
They just try and straightly outrun it in the direct path.
Yeah. There was that really silly moment in Prometheus, the Alien prequel or whatever, where there's a ship that's a circle. It's a giant ring, like a hula hoop, and it's rolling, and she kind of runs away from it instead of just stepping to the side. It's literally a hoop-shaped ship that's rolling at her.
You need to do the ole.
Yeah. Just like, ha, parry, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a total trope. All right, and we're going to finish up trope time this week. These are great, everyone. With Michelle Michelle Apala-Tegui.
Lovely.
Beautiful name. I know I'm getting that wrong. So, Michelle, please tell me how to pronounce that in the future. Water breaking, going into labor. Only about 10% of a woman's water breaks, even on its own. It's a time saver and easy exposition, but it's been pretty detrimental to many of our society's understanding of how labor works.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, you would think that 100% of the time women have babies, it's like, my water broke everywhere.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, though. A coworker of ours, who I will remain unnamed, just had a lovely baby. And in the office email he sent out talking about, you know, when it happened, he said his wife's water broke and then in parentheses wrote in quite dramatic fashion.
Yeah, movie style so, is what he should have said.
Kind of, exactly. But, like, that is interesting.
All right. So that's trope time. Keep them coming, everyone. We're going to move on to stream this and comment card. And I could have sworn I already picked this for stream this. But I went back through the stats compiled by Jill Hurley and the gang, and I didn't see it. Maybe I just talked about it briefly. But this is something I watched late last year, the Spike Lee's reboot of She's Gotta Have It. Did I talk about this?
You've talked about that you liked it.
All right. Well, I'm officially putting it in the stream this section because it is so great. It's based on the movie from 1986 of the same name. When I saw that She's Gotta Have It was being rebooted as a TV show, I thought, why bother? And then I watched it, and it is great. It is really, really awesome. 10 30-minute episodes with DaWanda Wise as Nola Darling. She is phenomenal. Anthony Ramos from Hamilton as Mars Blackman. And especially, I thought, who could play Mars Blackman but Spike Lee? But Anthony Ramos brings his own Mars Blackman to the table, and it's great. And he does a couple of little, like, please, baby, please. He does a couple of the old Mars Blackman lines, but he makes it his own, yet it's still the same in a way that's, like, it's really, really great. Lyric Bent is Jamie Overstreet, and Cleo Anthony is Greer Childs. And if you don't know about the original movie or the show, it's a story of a young African-American woman who has got three boyfriends, and she doesn't want to choose between them. They all do something different for her. One is very stable and has money and is ambitious. One is silly and fun. That's Mars. And one is a model and super handsome. Mm-hmm. And she's very frank about her sexuality. All the guys know she's not cheating on them. They all know about each other. And that's one of the great parts in the movie is that all the guys at one point get together and she brings them in and they have a big dinner together to kind of go through this. But Spike Lee manages, he directed all the episodes to make this completely fresh and new for today's times. Took a movie from 1986, dusted it off, and I'm dying to know how this came about to begin with, because it was a sort of a brave thing to do, I think, a risky thing to do. But it's of the time, it's fresh, it's current, it's funny, it's well acted, the direction is great. And I thought it was a one-off, and Emily and I were really disappointed. But I saw that earlier this year it was picked up for season two.
Oh, cool.
So it
works for that? Like they can just extend that world? Or is it contained story that's sort of in the movie, or does it go beyond that?
It's contained, but they could totally do more. And I'm glad they are. It's really, really great.
It sounds like it's just a good ensemble opportunity, right? Uh-huh. You could have different stories with these characters interacting. Yeah. That sounds cool.
I'm interested to see where it goes. Yeah. DaWanda Wise is just so great. I'd never heard of her before. And she's just beautiful and so talented. And it's good. I got a big fat crush on her right now. So does Emily. We agree on that one. and then finally, Comet Cardinal. Questions from you all to us. We'll go through a few of these. And then I got to hightail it out of here, everyone. Let me see here. All right. Who is your most revered film crew regular from throughout the history of cinema? He said, for example, costumer Edith Head. Yeah. All right. I'm going to go with the great Roger Deakins.
Ah, I was going to do that one.
Were you?
Yeah, it was fine. Well, that's easy. It makes it easy.
Well, let's talk about it then.
No, he's done everything, and he's just visually responsible for some of the greatest movies of our time. And, you know, he's just fantastic cinematographer, and you can just see his fingerprints on so many iconic movies. He doesn't have just one style or one look. He's very adaptable, and that's just such a crucial, you know, crew member in general, and he's one of the best versions of that. And he finally won his Oscar, I think, for Blade Runner 2048.
Yeah, way overdue. Like, he was – I think they gave – I mean, he deserved it for that for sure, but I think the outcry was so great by this point. Just ticking through some of his movies here, Barton Fink – Shawshank Redemption, Fargo. He worked a lot with the Coen brothers, obviously. Kundun, A Brother, Where Art Thou? The Man Who Wasn't There. No Country for Old Men, Revolutionary Road, The Reader, Skyfall, Jarhead. Of course, you just said the new Blade Runner. Just amazing. He's even made some documentaries. He did one on Van Morrison and one on Carl Perkins. So hats off to you, Roger Deakins.
He's even done some smaller movies, like I forget the director, but it's when you highlighted The Passion Fish. He did that one as well.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
John Sayles?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, Roger Deakins, you know you're going to get a gorgeous-looking film. Good question from Howard Carson. Let me see here. Alex Glasnovic says, what movies have your favorite supplements, commentaries, or special features on their Blu-ray? You know, I don't do the Blu-ray, and like I said, I don't do this much anymore, but I used to really get into this. So my pick is going to be an old one. But Boogie Nights has a very, very great director commentary, if I remember correctly. And it's always good. It's like a master class to sit in and hear P.T. Anderson talk about making a movie. So that's my pick. Do you have one, Noel? A director's commentary or actor's commentary that stands out?
I'm just so out of the loop with those. I haven't really messed with any in quite a long time. So I can't even – one doesn't come to mind.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I miss that stuff. But it's hard to watch a movie and then rewatch it again with a commentary on these days. I can't believe I used to have that much time in my life.
Must have been nice.
Let me see. Kayla M.H., what is your least favorite genre? I don't know if I have a least favorite genre. I mean, maybe the rom-com, because so many of them are not very good. Mm-hmm. That's I guess, my answer.
Yeah.
But if it's a good rom-com, I love it.
It's fine. Yeah. But typically, you're going to have to win me over.
Yeah.
Because even when people call it a rom-com, it's almost like the fact that you're giving it that distinction implies something of a lack of quality.
Like a lesser film?
Like a guilty pleasure kind of film, right?
Yeah. So I guess rom-com for me. Same for you?
I mean, I think it's an easy one to go to, yeah, because so many of the other genres, it's just like there's good shit in all of them. If we're talking sci-fi, horror, comedy, drama, is that what we're talking about? Documentary, I guess? I don't know.
Thriller.
Action-adventure.
Yeah.
I'm going to say action-adventure. If we're going to, like, you know, other than rom-com,
okay.
A straight action-adventure to me is not always interesting. I don't all seek them out.
Good answer. I don't have an answer for this, Noel, but you might. Anthony Norris says, did you ever have a test movie for people that you dated or wanted to date? Like, well, let's see if they like this because that'll tell me a lot about them. Do you ever have one of those?
I mean, just any...
Everything you like?
Everything I like. It has to tick all the boxes. No, I did hit it off with a girl once because we both liked the Talking Heads movie True Stories.
Oh, yeah.
And that was an odd one because it's strange and a lot of people don't even know it exists. And it's got a very odd sensibility. It's a lot of David Byrne kind of stream of consciousness talking and just weird suburbia stuff.
He directed that too, right?
I can't remember, but John Goodman's got a weird little part in it. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that was one that
all right.
She passed the test. But apparently I passed the test for her too because it was also like a favorite movie of hers and it ended up being this like cool little cross test thing.
Do you know what movie it was?
It was True Stories.
Oh, that was her test?
It was our, we were both kind of testing each other.
Gotcha. I thought there was another movie that she was testing.
No, it was just like we both liked it and were surprised that each other not only knew about it but also liked it a lot. Mm-hmm.
Good one. Kate Jacobson, what's a reboot that should never happen? Good question, Kate. There's plenty, but I'm just going to go ahead and throw out the Godfather series right off the bat. There's just some movies you can't remake.
I don't know that Hollywood would. As awful and money-grabby as Hollywood is, I don't know that they would ever allow that to happen.
I think you're right, but then...
You never know.
It's happened before when I've been like, what?
Maybe they do The Godfather 4.
The Godfather 4.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Coppola could.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to wonder, too, like, does he own the rights to that property in some way? Would he have to have final say as to whether they could do that? Because it seems like...
I mean, Paramount Pictures probably owns the rights to that, but yeah. He may have some juice.
Can a director be tied to that property in such a way where, like, you can't really go forward with it without him? I wonder.
I don't
know. Seemed like from the very beginning he had such pull that maybe he was able to smartly get that kind of deal.
Yeah, I bet you're right. All right, so that's comment card. Thanks for your questions, everyone.
Yeah, one last thing, Chuck. I just want to say you're getting shredded a little bit on Facebook for not liking Castaway.
Well,
getting healthily roasted, good-naturedly roasted.
I didn't dislike Castaway. I thought it could have been a much stronger film.
Yeah, I know. There's people that are giving you props and saying you had a good point about how it should have started a little later in. But then there's some people like, nope, Wilson the volleyball was a crucial character, and you, sir, are wrong. But I still love you.
I can take it. I can take it. Your homework is, let me look here. Mm-hmm. I have it scribbled down. Your homework is. Oh, great. The movie Get Out. Remember, this is a long time ago. I had David Diggs of Hamilton.
Yeah.
My first Tony winner.
Uh-huh.
David Diggs and his best friend growing up, Rafael Casal, they teamed up, like I said, old high school friends from Oakland, to write a movie together called Blindspotting. And I held off on the release. I interviewed them quite a while ago, but held off on the release to align with this movie, Blindspotting. It's really, really good. It's a very timely movie about race and class set against the backdrop of a gentrifying Oakland. Like I said, their hometown. It's a really, really good movie. And the guys were just so cool and nice and just sweetheart dudes. David Diggs, it was great to meet both of them. So we talked a lot about their movie and filmmaking and Hamilton, but we did talk about Get Out. They agreed that they could both talk about that movie.
Instant classic.
Yeah. So watch Get Out and listen up this Friday. And we will see you next week.
Later.